This is The Bottom Line. I'm Dave Fallon, along with Providence Business News editor Mark Murphy. Hello, Mark.
Hi there, Dave.
The Deepwater Wind Farm off Block Island is now in its testing phase. The turbines are up, and now where do we go from here with that project?
Well, I think they're going to start generating electricity before the end of the year. It's a pretty interesting and amazing engineering feat. I mean, these turbines are huge, much bigger than anything you could build on land. And I think it's also interesting in terms of we finally now are going to be able to see what effect being the first mover in this industry is. And there is a limited amount of space where offshore wind energy can be generated. I mean, it's physical. It's not a sort of a virtual marketplace of consumers. And so the fact that Deepwater Wind is going to be able to demonstrate that they've been able to build these and operate them and bring in the power gives them an advantage when bidding on other opportunities and projects. They already have a lease for land, undersea land for the ocean that's actually partially in Rhode Island waters and Massachusetts waters, although actually federal waters, but in between the borders. And that's going to come, and that's going to be a really big project. And they could sell that energy anywhere. They could sell it to Rhode Island. They could sell it to Massachusetts. They could sell it to New York. And they want to build on other projects as well, including another one for, off Long Island.
And states are beginning to contract for wind power as a requirement.
Well, yes, that's right. Massachusetts passed a law that said they have to have a certain percentage of renewables, which brought back interest in offshore wind in Massachusetts, because of course Massachusetts thought it was going to have the first one with Cape Wind, but very wealthy opponents kept it from happening, and it seems to be dead in the water. Although the Cape Wind folks somehow are keep praying that they'll be able to make it happen, but the requirement that utilities buy a certain amount of renewable energy is going to drive a lot of this development, and more states are looking in that direction.
What about the cost? Deepwater Wind is expected to cost about $300 million.
For the Block Island farm,
might that cost be dropping down the road?
Well, the per unit cost will drop. The per megawatt cost will drop. I mean, the big project that we're talking about, which might be 100 turbines versus 5, is going to be in the billions of dollars. However, the individual cost per megawatt is going to go down for a lot of reasons. Number one, now they know what they're doing, and it's just the economies of scale. You buy more steel, the individual cost goes down. You have people who know what they're doing. It's a lot of pieces. So there's no question that the price will come down.
What is the potential for a broader connection with the Rhode Island economy?
Well, I think that the Deepwater Wind said, they were thinking, I think it was 800 jobs they were going to bring eventually. Now, they had actually hoped by the beginning, I think the end of this year, the beginning of next year, to have this big project already done. So, they're certainly behind, although that's not necessarily their problem. It's been it's a difficult market. You had the recession in between. It slowed a lot of stuff down. But I think that the idea is that a lot of the staging and hopefully some of the some of the ancillary supplier arrangements, businesses can happen here. It's certainly real. I mean, the next question is, can they get financing for the bigger project? And if they do that, then Rhode Island will certainly gain. How much? It's unclear. Deepwater Wind is headquartered here, so I think they have a responsibility to their investors, but they also like to feel themselves to be a Rhode Island company.
This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Dave Fallon. We're speaking with Providence Business News editor Mark Murphy. And let's shift gears to another subject. Providence Business News recently held a healthcare reform summit. Some major themes that came out of that in your thinking.
Well, there will be continued change in how people are going to be asked to consume healthcare. And it's not just about payment, but it's how much responsibility they're going to have to take in terms of knowing, which kind of healthcare is going to happen. It will change how their doctors and hospitals are arranged. The idea that we've talked about for a long time, patient-centered medical homes, the accountable care organizations, these are all sort of disruptors to the old fee-for-service model, where you were paid, a doctor was paid by, sort of what kind of tests did they do. So now the idea is you pay per person, with certain kinds of diagnoses. And the idea is that if a doctor or, a practice or a hospital can bring in the cost along with a better quality outcome, and it costs less than they share in some of that savings. And you're going to see more and more of those kinds of arrangements.
There are many, many hospitals in the area, many other healthcare institutions. Did the idea of maybe too many hospitals come up?
Absolutely. And you know, one of the interesting things from the summit was that when you talk about, you know, trying to wring costs out of the system, a lot of the issues here, you know, with for instance, what I was just talking about, the patient-centered medical home, those are variable costs. You know, they're changeable based on the consumer. But a lot of the fixed costs are in buildings. And so the question is, you can't really wring out the costs. I mean, Rhode Island Hospital is there. It has to be staffed. It has to be heated. You have to supply electricity. You have to, you know, get tongue depressors. You know, whatever it is that has to go in there is a fixed cost. And so the issue is, are there too many fixed costs in a state as small as Rhode Island is? And you can see, you know, when Care New England was talking about changing some of the services at Memorial Hospital in Pawtucket, the community was outraged. But that's a conversation that's going to have to continue to be had. You know, there may be just too many physical facilities for the state, for the population here.
There seems to be a shift as to who is actually in the health insurance universe. We have an aging population, people entering with some physical problems, as opposed to the lack of healthy young millennials signing up, for example.
Well, this is one of the key points of the Affordable Care Act, right, which was to eliminate pre-existing conditions, you know, for insurers, because a lot of insurers had sort of cherry-picked and said, we're not going to take that person. And so, you know, a lot of people were exposed to great financial hardship. By not allowing that, what's happened is a lot of these folks are now buying insurance. And so disproportionately, very high-cost, cases are coming into the risk pool. And the problem is, as you pointed out, is that really healthy young folks who feel like, I'm not going to get sick. I don't need to buy insurance. It's just money out the door. They're not getting in. They can't balance off, you know, the risk of the entire population. And so what's happening is the cost of healthcare per unit, per person, is actually going up. Another interesting thing is, with more people in the systems, they're getting, you know, more and better preventative care. They live longer. Well, if you live longer, you consume more healthcare. So that's costlier too. So two things that were actually goods in overall for society, getting more people insured, getting more healthcare consumed, actually cost a lot more too. And that's driving a lot of these changes that people are seeing, where, you know, healthcare insurance is going up.
Did the idea of it being too confusing sometimes for folks to shop for healthcare, did that surface?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we had one, you know, man, a member of the audience, ask a question about this, and he said, you know, there was a bill coming for his mother who had recently passed away, even after she had passed away, and he didn't know what the heck these bills were for, and it took a while to sort of sort out. But everyone who's had to deal with healthcare knows this. You know, there's a And interestingly enough, it really, the people on the panel, you know, the professionals and insurers, hospital executives said, until a few years ago, even they didn't necessarily know all of the costs down to the, you know, the item as well as they should have. So it's a question of evolving and that becoming more part of the conversation.
We've been talking with Providence Business News editor Mark Murphy, this time on The Bottom Line. Mark, thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
I'm Dave Fallon. This is Rhode Island Public Radio.
Major funding for The Bottom Line is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.